for the sake of completeness, the first case before the court this morning would be State of South Dakota versus John Byron Martin. For the appellant, John Byron Martin, we have Mr. David Claggett, an attorney from Spearfish, and for the appellee, State of South Dakota, we have Ms. Ann Meyer, an assistant attorney general. For those who are listening on the internet access, the court's docket this morning will be two cases rather than three, this case and then one commencing at 10 o'clock. So there will be no 11 o'clock argument. With that, Mr. Claggett, you may proceed, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm representing John Martin. John is a resident of Butte County, has a business in Lawrence County. We're asking that John's 10 convictions of possession of child pornography in Butte County and 20 convictions in Lawrence County be reversed for a number of reasons. The facts in this case are very simply that on April 9th of 2002, John was approached in his place of business in Spearfish by two law enforcement agents who started questioning him about his computer and his internet access. He was very forthcoming. Eventually met with them that same day at the police station in Spearfish, answered their questions. The officers did not have a search warrant when they first came in. They obtained a search warrant after they first talked to him to search his computer and his place of business in Spearfish, and then also to search his home up in Belle Fourche. There was a computer in both places. The statute that they went under was 2222.3.1, which was repealed as of July 1st of 2002. We briefed the statute. It was very broad. That was, John's charges up in Butte County consisted of 10 counts. These were pictures that were taken off his hard drive in his home in Butte County. We went to court on that one and tried it to Judge Bastian on stipulated facts. And I think the record's pretty clear on that. The judge convicted John on each of the 10 counts, gave him the maximum two-year sentence. At that time it was 2 years and now it's a 10-year sentence. Imposed 10 years worth of probation. Allowed him a suspended execution of sentence, required him to serve 45 days in Lawrence County Jail, which have been served.
Was that a suspended imposition or a suspended execution?
Suspended execution of sentence. Okay. The cases basically were going on at the same time between Butte County and Lawrence County. The judge also imposed a number of conditions on John on probation. He imposed a 10-year probationary period. I believe in this case, the judge had mistakenly believed that it was a 10-year sentence. It was a class 4 instead of class 6 at the time, and that shows up in the transcript. But he indicated that a 10-year probationary sentence is what he wants to go on. He also forbid John to have any computers or any internet access, and also to have no unsupervised contact with any minors under the age of 18 years of age. John went to trial on that one on December 5th of last year. And on December 10th and 11th, he was tried in Lawrence County. In that case, it was not on stipulated facts. In that case, he was charged with 29 counts of possession of child pornography. The pornography had been taken off of his computer at his office. 20 of these images were stated to be in the temporary internet files, but dated back months before the arrest. Nine images were on his hard drive. Judge Johnson acquitted him of the nine charges for the images on his hard drive. The DCI agent Evans testified that in order to extract the images off the hard drive, he had to use a special software program that he possesses. And John did not have that same software, obviously. I think Judge Johnson believed that the defendant did not have the ability to call those images back up that were on the hard drive. But he presumed that images that still were on the temporary internet file could be called up. Judge Johnson, again, granted a suspended execution of sentence. He sentenced John to 45 days in the penitentiary, which had been served. He gave him the maximum 2 years sentence on each charge on the 20 counts. He also granted or ordered a 10-year probationary period and imposed basically the same prohibitions against access to the internet, use of a computer. In this case, John has in fact served his penitentiary time. Now, we're asking the court to reverse the convictions on a couple of different bases. One is that the prior statute, we believe, was overbroad under the First Amendment in Article 6, Section 5 of the South Dakota Constitution. The statute has been reproduced, and it's fairly lengthy in the briefs, but in essence, it proscribes the possession of any depiction, and depiction is broadly defined. It can be basically anything, virtual, simulated, or real, of any minor, defined as under the age of 18, engaging in any prohibited sexual activity. And the prohibited sexual activity includes nudity. The nudity under another statute, the statute that we're challenging, the repealed statute is 2222.3.1. Under 2222.22, the prohibited sexual activity is defined to include nudity. If the nudity is depicted for the sexual gratification of anybody who may view it, and it's a very broad standard, I think. In addition,
the images that they found on his computers, do they just depict nude children, or was it children engaged in sexual
activity? There's a difference between the two counties. It's a good question. The county, Butte County, went to trial with 10 images. The only image that actually depicted any kind of sexual activity was image number 9. That states exhibit number 2 from the case. And I think it's very clear in viewing that image that it is that it doesn't contain actual children. And I think just a view of it, it's a drawing or a painting. And the other ones simply are nudity. Now, I believe that under my argument regarding virtual nudity or virtual image, that that conviction cannot stand.
There is a virtual image?
Yes. And again, since we tried it to the judge, Judge Bastian, on stipulated facts, we have a de novo review of that. And I think my view of that image, it was pretty clear that it wasn't actual children. The judge
did make a finding about whether it was an actual child or a virtual image?
He did in his decision. His decision was that he felt that they were all children. There were not actual separate findings that were entered, but that was his ruling.
So are you asking us then to look at the pictures and overrule the court by making our own fact findings?
I am, since we offered this to the court on stipulated facts, and I believe the de novo review is the appropriate standard. I think it is clear in that circumstance that in that particular conviction should not stand. And I don't believe that that conviction would be appropriate under any of the case law that has been cited, including Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition case. And obviously we're dealing with different statutes, but we're dealing with the same concept. And the problem I think that we have right now is we're back where in 1972, 73, we were dealing with the Miller v. California cases and the prior case of Roth. We were starting to deal with obscenity issues. Obviously, this has been an issue of concern for our legislature, because the statute we have, I believe, had been repealed or had been amended the year before, and we deal with this statute, 2222.23.1, that has now been repealed as of July 1st last year, and a new statute is coming into play. So I think the legislature is trying to find a constitutional way to actually define what these matters entail, especially when you talk about a computer. Now, in this case, one of the concerns we have is whether or not these images were the result of mouse trapping or pop-ups, which happen on everybody's computer. It is an offensive practice, but it happens. And in that case, the question is whether or not anybody that has that on their hard drive would be guilty of what is now a 10-year felony. How do you protect yourself on that? The testimony of Agent Evans indicates that if you have a proper shredding program, you may be able to remove that from the hard drive, but how many people know that?
But doesn't the admissions of your clients to the investigating officer that he was on some kind of a hunt just negate the claim that somehow he was a victim of an accidental pop-up?
Well, I don't know if that applies to these particular images. There was never a single time when Mr. Martin was confronted with these images to confirm whether or not he'd ever even seen that image. And I don't know whether or not they came up with pop-ups, whether or not that was part of the search. I think your comment certainly bears some follow-up on it, because that's the type of statement you probably hear from a number of defendants. In this particular case, though, by the time we got to trial, I believe everybody, including law enforcement, totally believed and understood that that's what John was doing, simply because they got to know him a little bit. So we're really dealing in this case with the issue of whether or not every image on a hard drive should be an image that a person should be prosecuted for, and in this case, for 10 years at a pop, which is, I mean, frankly, you can do a lot more time on this than you can do on a murder case, which seems to be, obviously, it's in part the legislature's choice. And I think the legislature, in its redefinition of this statute, has gone a little bit further in trying to deduce what really should be an appropriate way to handle these cases. Under the new statute, 22224.1, subsection 7, they've gone so far as to incorporate Miller versus California in how you would view each one of these images. And appealing to the prurient interest, social redeeming value, taken as a whole, basically. And the statute very simply sets those out. Those were not the standards that were there before. And perhaps that would help a little bit. I believe, and I think, that the more appropriate way of handling these prosecutions is to look at a unit of prosecution. Unit of prosecution being the computer. Or, in this case, as my argument indicated, if you have a book, and a book contains 100 images of what somebody would determine to be either pornography or child pornography. Do you prosecute this person for having the book, or do you take each page and prosecute them for each image or each depiction? I think 22.3.1 is broad enough to be read that way, either way, in particular, when it talks about possession of a depiction in a tangible medium of expression.
So under your theory, if a computer had one pornographic or obscene document, it would be a violation of the law, one violation, right?
That is actually the theory that
if you had 20,000, it would be one violation of the law.
Under a unit of prosecution, yes. Yes. And one thing that I do want to point out is on the union, the tangible medium of expression section, the subparagraph 3, unnumbered subparagraph 3 of 22.23.1, any depiction in any printed materials, each depiction is interpreted as a violation. Therefore, we go back to, do you take a book and tear it apart? And the depictions are so broad, it doesn't matter if it's a written word, spoken, it doesn't matter if it's an image. It is that broad.
Does the legislature have statutory authority to make every picture in the book a separate violation?
I think they would, yes. If in fact they said that's what it is, but that's certainly not the way it's prosecuted.
But you're saying they chose not to do that in this case?
No, I'm saying that if you apply the same analysis or the same reasoning as was applied in Mr. Martin's case, it would be the same interpretation that the book could be taken apart, because a clear reading of the statute encompasses any printed materials, any depiction in any printed materials.
I would anticipate the state would come back and say, well, under your theory, they're all free after the first one. How do you respond to that?
Well, and frankly, I don't have at this point, any particular direction for the legislature. This is akin to what happened in Ashcroft, where they basically said the CCPA sections that were dealt with regarding virtual or depictions beyond dealing with actual children should not be prosecuted. And they went and left it back to the Congress to come up with a better interpretation. Now, if the Congress said, in particular, if this case you're giving somebody 10 years for it on a possessory charge, if our legislature said for each unit of prosecution we're going to use a book or we're going to use a computer, fine. No question at all about that. I don't think in this particular case that the punishment can possibly fit the crime for a possessory offense, particularly when you can tear a hard drive apart. You don't have to prove whether or not a particular individual knew that that particular image was in there that they're being prosecuted on.
You have to prove intent?
Scienter, I think you have to prove intent, but in this one, the statute says knowingly possess. Knowingly possess, what does that mean? Does it mean it's on your computer, that it was accessed at one time? Does it mean that if you delete this and it still can be found by somebody on your hard drive, do you still knowingly possess that? I submit it shouldn't. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. And frankly, we're also dealing with it, in this case, going back to the possessory part of it, we're dealing with an individual that received units, not a person that was in the production process of passing those on, as in Ferber, for instance. When they were talking about that, the concern was the use of actual children, and the person that was purveying that use, not simply with nudity, but with definite sexual acts, and a conviction for that. What they were trying to do is interpret Miller versus California and make sure that they could extend it onto what would constitute child pornography. Okay, I simply don't think that the appropriate standards have been put into the old statute. I think the old statute being repealed, a new one being put in, there's a step in the right direction. And I understand perhaps that the court will be dealing with the new statute fairly soon as far as the interpretation of the statute. It is much clearer.
Statute. Well, aren't we bound by the Miller standards, whether they're contained in a U.S. Supreme Court decision or a statute?
Oh, I understand that, yes. And the question is whether or not under overbreadth, for instance, or on a due process interpretation, whether or not if we stick to due process, can a person of ordinary intelligence know that that particular image located on that hard drive will subject them to a 10-year penalty for each image that's on there. And frankly, in my review of Mr. Martin's interview out there, Mr. Martin had no idea that what he was being called for was a criminal offense that he was alleged to have been committing. He simply didn't know. This was on a computer, and he didn't know that our laws would extend that far. And I think that would be the clearest test for me as to whether or not this would be a statute that a person of reasonable ordinary intelligence would be able to understand that they had a criminal penalty coming up that was this severe and this wide ranging. And again, under the new statutes, it's even more so.
On those pictures,
yes.
that were actually children, were they the same children or were each of the pictures a different child?
Different children. And if you look at the Lawrence County case, in the Butte County case, there's no timeline put on when these pictures were actually received by the computer. On the second day of trial in the Lawrence County case, the DCI agent says and offered evidence that he ran a timeline. And a lot of these images, 10 convictions occurred for images that were received on this dial-up network that Mr. Martin was on, not the broadband system that we've got that puts the images on quick. 10 of them were within a minute and 20 seconds or thereabouts. They resulted in a 20-year sentence. And right now, that's of great concern, obviously, for me. Another concern, maybe a little tangential, is my possession of these. I, frankly, would not have them in my office because I wouldn't want to put them on my computer. I wouldn't know if I could erase them. I would have no idea whatsoever. I would not want to, as a defense counsel, put myself in that kind of jeopardy. So I did review the pictures, but at the state's attorney's office, frankly. I think that the point is well taken, though, as far as the receipt of these images, how quickly they came in, and does that infer knowledge of that particular image? Or is this a matter of a pop-up? Is this a matter of something that came across the internet? I don't know how the court is receiving it, but I'm at the point where I have pop-ups from every advertiser out there, and I can barely get on my computer to do my own research, and nothing seems to wipe them off. I think once you visit any kind of site, inadvertently or intentionally, you're going to be faced with a lot of these pop-ups. And the question that we have is, how do you show, how does the state prove beyond a reasonable doubt that these pop-ups were intentionally obtained?
Well, but the pop-up scenario that you present, that's a question of fact for the jury or the judge that's trying the case, whether they were knowingly possessing them.
It is.
That's not an attack. It doesn't seem to me that that's a valid attack on statute. That's a question of fact for some fact finder to decide.
That is a question of fact. I would agree with that. And I see I'm out of time. If I may address some of this in my rebuttal.
That's for rebuttal. You can rely on your brief, though. We've all read your brief.
And, thank you.
You don't waive anything. It oftentimes happens that counsel don't get all the issues taken care of at oral argument that they would wish to.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Clyde. Ms. Meyer.
May it please the court. When our officers went to the business and to the home, they were carrying guns, they were carrying badges. This whole question about whether Mr. Martin knew what was going on, before we seized his computers, he talked to his attorney. He knew that we were coming in and looking at his computers for the reason that our officers told him, and that was this investigation on child pornography that stemmed from Operation Avalanche. Now, the fact that Ashcroft says that we are not going beyond Miller and Ferber, that's what we have in this case. These pictures show real children. They're real, living, breathing children. There's no mistake of that. No matter who the trier of fact is, or who's sitting in the prosecutor's office, or who's working with them, they fall under the prohibition of our statute that was in effect at the time.
What about the one picture 9, exhibit 2?
Picture 9, exhibit 2 is not a drawing. If you look at that, it's not a drawing. The light is slightly off, but that probably comes from the camera. It's still a real picture. You can see the lines of the faces of the girls that are in that picture. And so the trier of fact found that it was a real picture, too, although I realize that this is a de novo review. But our position is there's no question that that's a real picture.
I have a question about the facts of the case, though, aren't as significant when you're attacking the statute for overbreadth, isn't that? I mean, the facts of this particular case we would not look at if we're just looking at the First Amendment challenge to the statute.
That's a good question. Normally, because the First Amendment is so sensitive, you would be looking at how it affects all of us. In Mr. Martin's case, he is the last person under the statute to be coming up. So it's moot as to everybody but him. He's the last one. We got the first appeal yesterday on a Minnehaha case for the new statute. So he is the last person to be affected by the statute in any criminal prosecution. So in this case, you're in a unique position. He's the only one out there under the statute. So there are no other people who are going to be affected by the statute. But nevertheless, in his case, it's not overbroad. He is engaging in precisely the kind of conduct. He hit the bullseye of what our legislature was intending to prohibit. And that is possessing these pictures that show real children and real little girls and real little boys. And each picture, depiction is singular in our statute, so is representation. So he is holding each one of these, and counsel says that he didn't know they were coming in, their pop-ups, or their some kind of advertisement, but our expert explained that you can have these pictures with words, and you can have other pictures in the same picture that's coming in over the internet. And it doesn't mean necessarily that it's an advertisement. Judge Johnson asked our expert point blank whether these were pop-ups or whether the defendant has ever said they were pop-ups, and the defendant had never told the investigators that that was the case. His lawyer is trying to mix the issue up here. He knew that he was possessing these pictures for his own sexual gratification. He'd had his own self-realization about that. Even he understood it. His wife had told him to stop, and he still continued pulling this reams and reams of pictures in. And he didn't just have the pictures that we prosecuted him for. He had thousands and thousands of images on his computer.
What about Mr. Claggett's argument that this is only one violation because you've got one computer? He's using the book analogy. What's your position on that?
Well, it's silly to think that the legislature was prosecuting just the chunk of plastic that the pictures are coming in, because the whole point of this case is that this is child sexual abuse, and each one of those children is being abused, and it counts as to that child. It's not a communal viewing of all these children. He's pulling each one down, and he's deleting each one. He's taking it and saving it and building favorites that he can go back to. And he's doing it over and over again. In some cases, he's deleting it. In some cases, he's printing it off, although the printed material was destroyed in this case. So it's not a question of a bulk unit of production. It's each individual picture. And I think if you look at the new statute, it's each individual image to each visual depiction. And that's what our research showed they've done in other states. Other states are prosecuting each individual picture. So I don't think that that's a problem in his case.
Has that issue gotten to the higher level of court and an appeal?
On the each individual pictures? The research that I saw was primarily they're at the state court level in Ashcroft. I don't think that was addressed. And I've looked at a lot of child pornography cases in the last 3 months. And so I think primarily the cases that we found were in the state courts and based on state statutes. So
why is it that you did not use the unit of prosecution test from Erickson, but rather focused on Blockberger in your brief? It seems to me that this is more of an Erickson unit of prosecution question.
Well, I don't think those federal cases are as on point as Blockberger. What we're looking at in our case and in our state, we have different children, as Justice Meyer Henry asked about. We have different sexual acts. And the test that we use under Chavez or Augustine is we're looking at the base conduct that you see in those pictures, and base conduct that we are seeing fit the exceptions or that with the delineations that are set out in 22-22-22. You have to have one of those prohibited sexual acts. You have to have an individual child. It has to be a real child, and those are the things that we're prosecuting under. Erickson isn't as persuasive as the cases that we have in our state.
Are you saying then that they have to be pictures of different children to be different violations?
Yeah, I think they would have to be pictures of different children.
So if you had five pictures of the same child, it's one violation?
Not necessarily if they're engaged in different acts in a series. Some of the pictures that we have here in 6 and 7 are a series of children. We've got four people in these pictures, and there's a same child, like a sister and brother, and a sister and brother, and a sister and brother, and they're all different acts. So when you have the series, no. When you have a single child, I think we'd have more problems with that.
Duplicates, then, are one violation, but anything that's not an exact duplicate is a separate violation. Is that what you're telling
us? That's what I'm seeing. We're seeing in the cases that if it's a different child entirely, that you have a separate violation.
When they've extended this to possession, it really is under the theory of protecting the child from abuse.
That's correct.
Sexual abuse.
That's correct.
So how would that fit your theory then?
Because each child is stripped of their dignity and is personally put on that internet for all time. Each child is the entity that's damaged here, and we have an overriding interest in protecting that. He's part of the infrastructure that's subjecting them to this kind of humiliation on a case-by-case basis. Each child is the one who's exploited. It's no different than if you're doing, for instance, if you're writing a bad check. He mentioned that this took place in seconds. People write bad checks in seconds. This is no different than if he'd shot five children in a crowd. Each one of these counts. Each child is different. And I think he's making the defense counsel is describing the overbreadth and vagueness together from what we understand in the argument that we just heard. But he was talking about the deleted items and I wanted to go back and talk about that. In the Butte County case, the deleted items are not time and date stamped. And in the Lawrence County case, our expert explains why that is. When the deleted items go into that portion of your computer that's deleted, their index or their table of contents will be overridden as time goes by. So they are not time and date stamped when we pull them off with our search material. However, he can still manipulate and control those things. He can still wipe them clean if he so chooses. And that's why we respectfully disagree with Judge Johnson about the software to pull it back up and look at it. He had to buy it, he had to pull it in, and he had to look at it before he could delete it. So he's still in possession of those deleted files on his computer in the Butte County case. And if you have any more questions.
I'm a little concerned about the prohibition here, or the condition of parole. The state has the right to search and seize without a warrant in his home or his office, right?
That's
as a condition.
Mm-hmm.
So why do they need to prohibit him from having a computer or using a computer or accessing the internet? I understand the possession, you know, the prohibition against possessing pornography for 10 years as part of his sentence. But why the other two?
You're talking about owning and possessing or accessing a computer?
Yep.
Those? And that's a very good question, because his case is different than many of the cases that are cited in the federal cases that are cited in our briefs. We have a homeopathic healer who's treating children on the very table in the same room where he has his computer that he's pulling down child pornography. The lower courts weren't comfortable with keeping that link there. And it's in his case, I don't see why it's indispensable that he has to have a computer. He didn't object. He didn't put on any evidence why it was indispensable to him that he had to have this computer. And the bottom line is that computer link, by his own admissions, is what got him in trouble in the first place. And it's linked very closely to the child pornography that he was looking at. And so that's why I'm sure that's why the lower courts saw that as a problem.
What is his business?
His business is homeopathic treatments of people. He's an herbal person who treats people's bodies. That's what he does.
He does not need the computer for his business, for his accounts receivable, for accounts payable.
There's no evidence in the record that he did, because the defense didn't object on that basis. If he does, I can't identify the reason why he'd need it.
And you can't identify any reason why he would need a computer?
In his business?
In his business or his home.
Why it would be indispensable to him? It's not like a telephone or the mail. I don't think it's indispensable in this case for him to have that. No. That's our position.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
You had mentioned in your brief that there were suspended impositions of sentence. Is that not right?
In our brief we said suspended execution of sentence, but when Judge Bastian drafted his document, he called it the suspended sentence, although they are suspended execution of sentences. And I'm glad you picked that up. That's true. They should both be suspended executions.
So he's a convicted felon on both counts.
Yes, that's correct.
Right.
And that's what our legislature intended.
Any further questions for the Assistant Attorney General? If not, thank you. Mr. Claggett, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I don't know that I'll take all of it, but I do want to address just a couple of quick issues.
Well, let me ask you is, did your client acquiesce in the loss of his computer and the loss of accessing the internet, and both at home and at the office?
In the sense that he did not make an objection at that time. That's correct. Frankly,
he doesn't object?
Oh, he does object, certainly at this point. And we've briefed that. In part, and I did want to clarify it, his actual business is that he repairs appliances, but he does have a homeopathic business as well. As far as any actual evidence referred to, he does not treat any minors without the presence of their parents, and he, to my knowledge, doesn't treat any minors at all.
Why does the state need to take his computer when they have the right to search and seize and go into his computer, either at his home or his office at any time?
They don't need to. And quite frankly, a prohibition for the next 10 years for him, which is probably the extent of his normal lifespan, would prohibit him from using email, from doing any research on the internet of any kind. For
why didn't you object?
Well, at this point, and I did want to bring this up, you know, as a defense counsel, a lot of times when we deal with these issues, we're concerned about what the outcome is. Obviously, in this case, my client faced an awful lot of years in the penitentiary. My early experience in another case where I did object led to my client receiving 30 years instead of the 4 that we expected him to get. As defense counsel, that's a concern.
So you thought he was going to get a greater sentence if you objected to this one point?
Certainly is a possibility. And even though, I mean, I have the greatest respect for Judge Johnson, and I really enjoy practicing in front of him.
How old is your client?
He is 64 now, almost 65. But I do believe that we have procedural safeguards that would protect the public, if in fact the court needs that, believes that that's appropriate, to allow him access to a computer and at home. I mean, he lives at home with his wife, and he can't possess a computer, and she doesn't dare have one in the house since he can't possess it, and it impacts her as well. I don't think it's at all necessary, and it certainly does not appear to be anything the legislature has indicated is an appropriate penalty in addition to the penitentiary time for a person that's been convicted of a charge like
that. Well, isn't that kind of similar to telling a person that has been convicted of DWI that they can't drink and possess alcohol? Kind of removing the temptation?
Well, not really, because drinking, despite a lot of what I hear from people that I defend, is not a necessity of life. And it doesn't even come close to rising to that. I don't know what I'd do without a computer, and I frankly believe anybody that's in business would have a great deal of time, difficulty, without having one there. I don't think it's a necessary or reasonable restraint on this liberty, and it certainly isn't necessary to enforce this provision.
If you did not object at the time of sentencing, have you gone back and petitioned the trial court for a modification arguing this?
I have not. This is all a matter of the appeal came up here. And I, quite frankly, I do believe that the courts would certainly like some guidance, because this is an issue I know that the circuit judges talk about. How are they going to handle these prosecutions? Because we're getting to see a lot of prosecutions coming up. And in part pushed by the feds, as this one apparently was. We don't know that for a fact, but we assume that. And they, I think, would not like to have some guidance as to what would be appropriate, what would not be appropriate. And we have basically, I think, a test case here. Okay. Unless there are any other questions, I think I've exhausted my ability to talk. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Court will be in recess until 10 o'clock.